They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me today on the Commons, I have an old friend, Debbie Goonan. She's known to many of you as well. And she is the incredible blogger of the independent American communities. I don't know how she does it, but she seems to have a blog every single day. So, Debbie, how do you do it? How do you get so many blogs out? Well, first of all, welcome to On the Commons again.
Thank you for having me again, Sue.
How do you manage to find the time to sit down and do, what, 2, 3, 4 blogs a day?
There's no shortage of material to write about. I think that's part of it. I have people, since I've been working on this blog now for maybe about a year and a half, almost 2 years, I now have people regularly sending me messages and emails saying, hey, here's something that might interest you, and they forward me articles, they forward me, case summaries. There's so many different things going on out there all over the country, and indeed even in Canada and other places around the world. So it's more of an issue for me to try to determine which ones to focus on in a particular day or week than to find stories or topics to write about.
No, I know, when I started this show 17 years ago, I had to sign a 6-month contract, and I'm thinking, oh my God, how am I ever going to be able to get mm-hmm. that much material to cover 6 months worth of weekly shows? 17 years later, I can't do all of it, but it's not that there's not enough to write about, it's finding the time to sit down and write about it. And you seem to be very capable of just picking the right stories and putting something out immediately.
Well, thank you. I try.
I'm impressed. I have to say, I'm really, really impressed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I just hope that I'm getting, that I'm helping to educate and inform people, whether they're buyers, whether they're, people in the legislature, other advocates, because there's quite a lot to learn, and I feel like I'm learning every day. Every day I, read something else, or I read another attorney's opinion, or I read something else that's come out over, out of a court case. Analysis from reserve specialists. I mean, there's just so many angles to this whole HOA industry thing that there's always something new to learn, and things keep changing. The landscape keeps changing. That's another part of it.
So how long have you been doing the blog? For a year and a half, but you've been involved with commenting online and being visible online for a lot longer than that. How long have you been involved with this crazy, crazy concept?
I would say probably beginning in around the year 2012. At the time, I was living in a large-scale community in Florida, and there were some issues and questions that I had, and I started to get involved on some discussion groups online, basically because I didn't know what I had stepped into, and I had no idea. I didn't know what's a reserve study or, you know, open meeting laws. I basically started getting into this asking questions. I did a lot of, for the first year and a half, I did a lot more asking questions and reading than I did commenting. And then as I started to learn more about it, then I started to, add my commentary and express my opinions and try to debate some of the people on the other side of the issues, most of them from community associations, institutes, the attorneys and the property managers or community managers that have CAI certification.
I wouldn't call them community. There's nothing community about it. About that's HOAs.
That's the standard. The community association is what the industry calls it.
No, I know.
They call them. Yeah, so.
I know.
But you're right. There's not a whole lot of true community, because in a true community, people are looking to care about one another, to work with one another. And a lot of times, as you know, in HOAs, you have just the opposite dynamic going on. It's more of an us versus them kind of mentality, or one person is engaging in self-preservation behavior, even to the detriment of their neighbor. But I don't need to tell you that. You know that already.
Well, yeah. It's been quite an eye-opener over the years, just watching how people react and behave in these things. And changing their ideas, because originally, before we had HOAs, I don't think people acted and reacted the way they do today. I think there was more of a sense of community in the neighborhoods than there is today. And although they like to call them communities, and although they claim to foster a sense of community, what they've done basically is destroyed residential America.
Yeah, it's just not. Well, the problem is you have a corporate, usually an HOA is set up as a corporation. In some states, they're mutual benefit corporations, and some they're nonprofit. Or not for profit. Some of them aren't technically incorporated, but it's still, the model is written based upon more of a contract law or a corporate law as opposed to constitutional law. And so you're starting off with a group of board members. Originally it starts off with a developer. Later on it's passed to volunteer homeowner board members. But in either case, you have the pot of money from all the homeowners being collected by this entity, this HOA entity. So you have the power of the purse strings on all of this money, and those are the people who, if there's ever any kind of a conflict involved, and it ends up being a legal conflict, you've got the HOA has everybody's assessment money. They have insurance policies to protect them, so they have high-paid insurance attorneys that are working for them. And it's impossible for, nearly impossible, for a single owner or even a small group of owners to fight against those odds, because you're actually paying twice. You're paying for your own legal expenses, to either defend yourself against being sued by the HOA, or the other way around if you're forced to sue the HOA. Plus, you're paying indirectly your share of the cost that your HOA is incurring fighting against you. So you just don't have that same dynamic involved outside of HOA land.
Well, I think that, not only all the technical stuff and the lawsuits and the fact that somebody's holding a gun to your head and helping themselves to your money to push forth their own agendas. It might not be something that you would agree with, but you have no option in that.
Right.
But it's just the idea that now it's okay to look into your neighbor's yard, to peek into their windows, to decide that, you know, their dog's too fat or their flower pot is cracked or you don't like the flowers they have in their yard or the color of their curtains is the wrong shade of white.
Right.
And
or you don't like the fact that they have a pickup truck parked in their driveway.
It's all the minutiae that we seem to be so involved with, and this was never part of the way people lived before. This was never part of the way people, that's not how you build community.
No, and there was just recently another story that Judy Thomas did in the Kansas City Star, and it was a family, that they have 10 kids. Some of them are adopted, some of them are foster children, and they have a few special needs children. And one of them, they have an 11-year-old son who needs to be in a wheelchair. And so they put a wheelchair ramp. They had a wheelchair ramp installed in front of their house. And, within hours, the HOA came after them saying, well, you didn't get permission, and now you either need to remove it, you need to put the ramp in the garage where we can't see it, or you need to completely screen it with landscaping. So, why is it necessary for these parents who are taking care of 10 children to put out, hundreds, thousands of dollars extra money to buy landscape plants to essentially hide the ramp from their neighbors? And how offensive is that, Shu?
And this goes back to what I was saying. I mean, we've lost complete sense of real community.
Right.
If a ramp, the sight of a ramp is more important than going over and helping your neighbor who's taking care of 10 kids.
Right.
Now we've sort of flipped all the priorities over on their ear, and we're just, I think we're just really going down the wrong path. I think what we're doing is terrible. I really do. But anyway, you mentioned Judy Thomas. Judy Thomas, in case anybody has not heard, just did a whole series of articles for the Kansas City Star and their HOA stories from around the country. And you will note quite apart from this particular story that you're talking about, Debbie, they seem to have a thing for kids. They don't like kids, and they're going to make life tough for parents who do have kids. You have the story of the little girl who managed to try to hang herself. I mean, she's 3 years old. She had no idea what she was doing. But she sort of tied the strings of the,
blinds.
The blinds.
Yeah.
Thank you. Around her neck and was screaming. And when the mother took the blinds down, which is exactly what I would have done, the HOA decided they had to put the blinds back because having blinds out from the outside was more important than a child's safety.
Exactly. And then you have neighbors, even some of the neighbors who live there and some of the people who buy into all this insensitive nonsense saying, well, you can put up cordless blinds that have the same look. Well, yes, but they might cost four times as much as a pair of curtains.
They're your windows. Why the hell do you have to put in blinds?
Exactly. So what they're saying is, in order to have some sort of a uniform appearance, That's more important. And we'll, and by the way, we're willing to force you to spend a lot more of your hard-earned money to do that, to keep your daughter safe. I mean, the whole thing is just backwards.
It is, and that's a really good word for it. It's very simple and easy to understand. It's backwards.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken the whole concept of neighborly, being neighborly and living in a community, and we flipped it on its ear. It's backwards, it's nasty, it's contentious, and of course, when finally, I mean, thank God for Judy, because her series of articles has been absolutely phenomenal, and I understand
yes.
she's going to continue with them, so I'm really yes. pleased. But of course, now you have the industry that rakes in $85 billion. Well, I don't know how much they rake in. HOAs generate $85 billion a year. How much of it goes in their pockets, I don't know, but I suspect a sizable chunk. And I also suspect that that $85 billion with a B, folks, is mm-hmm. just a drop in the bucket. I think there's a lot more than that that's generated from HOA victims.
Right.
Denizens, right. if you will. I hate the word victims, but, you know, you're being fleeced, guys. For anybody who's out there listening, you are being
yeah.
fleeced because there's nothing in an HOA for you. Four walls and a door, you don't need an HOA.
No.
Do you? You don't live in an HOA. You finally got out, right, Debbie?
We moved out in 2013. But, you know, I stayed with the, I don't know if you want to call it a movement or an advocacy movement, because I found it to be something that's very important. I mean, it gets to the basic rights, you know, of we're kind of getting away from our civil rights, our civil liberties, and even the U.S. Constitution to some extent, because, you know, we're taking away people's rights to their private property. I mean, when you move into a common interest community, which is the technical term for HOAs and condo associations and cooperatives, you're basically giving up some of your private property rights. It doesn't necessarily need to be structured quite the way that it is, but it is structured in a way that there are CC&Rs or covenants and restrictions that are tied into this whole mess of sharing common areas with people. You know, if this was just a matter of a bunch of people wanted to get together and share maintenance of a park, that would be one thing. But they don't want that. You know, they also want to be able to tell you what color you can paint your house and what kind of window coverage you can hang up in your house, whether or not you can have a home business, you know, what kind of a play structure you can put up for your children in the backyard. And I really don't know what one has to do with the other, but somehow you can't, there aren't really any common interest communities that I can think of that don't have some kind of covenants and restrictions behind them and the board to enforce those covenants and restrictions, often selectively and arbitrarily.
You know, you can have covenants. That's part of that. They've been around for 100 years or hundreds
mm-hmm.
of years. You know, they come
right.
from and you don't need an HOA to enforce a covenant. I mean, that's about the biggest myth and the biggest lie on earth.
Right. In fact, I live in a house right now that has covenants and restrictions, but no HOA.
And so if your neighbors find you're doing something that violates the covenants, they can deal with it.
They could. I mean, I can't imagine that anybody would. And quite frankly, you know, I read the covenants and restrictions, and there were certain things in there, and I said, well, it's very clear to me that my dozen or so neighbors that are governed by the same restrictions either haven't read them or they've ignored them. So, and which is, you know, a healthy way to be. you know, people should not be that concerned about whether or not your neighbor decides to put up a garden shed in their yard, or whether or not your neighbor's propane tank is screened adequately to your preferences. I mean,
and my favorite story has to do, it goes back a number of years, and I really need to find that lawsuit, but it has to do with a developer who bought a tract of land and developed it and put in all of these townhouses.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody discovered that the original owner had recorded a covenant specifying a setback. And, of course, the townhouses did not conform to the setback. So they went to court.
Mm-hmm.
And they won.
Right.
And the judge ordered the developer to take them down. But you didn't have an HOA. There was no HOA. I don't know if there was one afterwards, whether they had, you know, there must have been some kind of association attached to the new ones. But they were torn down because the covenant stood. Now, that was one person. And you don't need to go and take money from everyone to go
because
to
it's
court.
Because this way it becomes a dispute that's limited to the neighbors involved, as opposed to, you know, you're pulling in everybody else's money and dragging them into a case. And in many cases, Shu, you know, the neighbors don't know that these lawsuits are going on.
Oh, they don't. They really don't. They have absolutely no clue that they're there. But now that these stories have come out, of course, this just absolutely will drive the industry, the CAI people, absolutely nuts, which it has. And Tom Skiba, the CEO, obviously sent a letter. And they keep bringing out these surveys conducted by Zugby.
Yes.
To prove that research affirms findings from 5 surveys over the last 11 years. By large majorities, residents rate their overall community experience as positive or, at worst, neutral.
Yeah.
The findings objectively and refute the unfounded and unsubstantiated myth that the community association model is failing to serve the best interests of Americans who choose to live in common interest communities. For the majority of Americans, their home is their single largest investment. Your choice to attack the community association housing models with anecdotal horror stories is a disturbing attempt to instill fear and unrest in your readers. Community Associations Institute will continue to inspire enlightened leadership and responsible, engaged citizenship ideals reflected in communities that are preferred places to call home. Nowhere, nowhere do they mention the kids. Nowhere do they mention the horrible discriminatory practices of HOAs that, despite everything, continue. Yeah. Nowhere are they concerned about people losing their homes.
Mm-mm. No, it's a very dismissive attitude, isn't it?
It's like these are just anecdotal and they're isolated incidents and, you know, you're focusing on the wrong side of things. But that's not necessarily the case. Chippy conducted their own survey some years ago and found the opposite to be true.
Right.
And I suspect, now you want to take a bet, that there will be yet another Zogby survey, but what I find totally interesting is that They say they have 5 surveys over the last 11 years. How many of the homeowner advocates, and we have a lot of them,
right,
have ever been contacted? You think some of them would?
Well, we're not on their list.
The first time they did this, it was a tag on, and it was not a Zogby, and I can't remember the name of the company that did it. It was a tag on to a different survey.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept talking about it. They were much more open in the old days, and this is, we're going back to the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
They were much, much more open about having the survey, and they said they were doing it. And it was coming. So I was on the air, and I asked if anybody, any listeners out there, had been contacted by this survey, for this survey, to please call in. I did not hear from anyone. No one. Well, it turns out that out of the millions of people who allegedly live in these things, they only talked to 401 people.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is that they were selective as to who they talked to.
If you look at, I did do a little bit of looking into the last two surveys that CAI had done, both in 2014 and 2016. And what I found out was in 2014, the survey was done by a company by the name of Public Opinion Strategies, and it was an online survey. And the 2016 survey, the most recent one, was done by Zogby Analytics, which has done some of their previous surveys before. And Zogby this year did a hybrid study. If you look at the methodology, they had some people that they called up on the telephone and did a telephone survey, and then they had another set of people that did the survey online. And what they did is they did they took the data from both, compared them, didn't find any significant statistical differences, so they combined the results for their survey. But I wanted to get a little more information about the survey companies that CAI is using. And there's an organization called 538. They're at 538, spelled out the words, 538.com. And they did a comprehensive study comparing all of the major survey and polling companies, just to see what their track record was. Of course, they were focusing on political elections. But, you know, so they took all the big ones, Rasmussen and, all of the big survey companies. Well, Public Opinion Strategies, they give a B grade. Zogby Analytics got a C minus. So Zogby Analytics, which did their most recent survey and several of the earlier surveys, is not what you would call the most highly regarded survey company. And one of the criticisms of Zogby Analytics is that they tend not to pick samples that are very representative of the population that they're polling. So, and I think that's reflected in some of the data that comes out of CAI surveys, because if you look at in 2016, they asked, one of the questions that they asked was, in your current community, have you ever attended any community association board meetings? And this is a question that they've posed to their survey respondents 6 times in a row since 2005. Well, of course, the result for 2016 comes out and says, okay, well, 69% of homeowners have attended a board meeting, and the other 30% have not. But in 2014, they asked an additional question, or they reported on an additional question that they asked their survey recipients. The question was, do you currently or have you in the past served on a homeowners association or condominium board? And 20% said yes, they've served on the board. So just looking at those two questions alone, Shu, I mean, it defies common sense, because one thing that we know that both advocates and CAI has been lamenting and complaining about for years is that there's so much apathy and mm-hmm. nobody attends the meetings mm-hmm. and it's so hard to get people to serve on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we say that the sample of people who have answered this survey is a representative sample if one out of five have served on the board? And, okay, you know, the question does say, have you ever attended any board meeting? So that means, okay, you could have lived in your community for 10 years, 20 years, 5 years, and if you went to one meeting, okay, that's not really so many meetings. But even that doesn't hang together, because when I was living in my HOA, I did attend meetings, and the people who did attend the meetings, there weren't that many, it was the same couple of people over and over again. It's not as though, you know, you could pick any 10 people who lived in the neighborhood and say, well, you know, you could count 7 out of those 10 would have attended a meeting at some time during their lifetime of living there. We know that that's not the case. And if it was ever intended for that to be the case, then, you know, most of these associations would have a formal meeting or gathering place where they expect people to actually show up. You know, they wouldn't be having meetings out in the park or by the pool or in somebody's house, or, you know, in larger communities, they have a small room set aside in their clubhouse that, you know, might seat 20 people at most, you know, maybe 30 people. So it just doesn't hang together. You know, you have to wonder if the people who responded to this survey are people who served on the board and who go to board meetings fairly regularly. It stands to reason that they're going to rate their boards as being, it's going to be skewed more in the positive direction, because they're not going to rate themselves negatively.
The original, and I wish I could remember the name of the company. It's on the tip of my tongue, and it's just not coming. But the original survey company, who I understand is a very well-respected and well-rated company, mm-hmm. to do this, did include the question, you know, have you attended your meetings? At mm-hmm. the time, CAI was sending out all these warnings. Oh, my God, if you don't start attending meetings and stop being so damned apathetic, then the whole HOA concept is going to collapse and it's going to be your fault. I mean, it was just this irrational ranting and raving and all of that. I mean, right. It was just constant flow of this kind of stuff that came out. The day, and in those days, CAI was infinitely more open than they are now. You had mm-hmm. entirely different leadership. And when the results, the survey results, the tag-on survey results were released, they made them available to everyone at the same time. The whole packet okay. was made available.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing another show at the time, and I had Bob Diamond on the next day. In fact, it was my last show
of HOA talk. And he sat there and he's talking. He had not been there. He had not been down to the press center, and he had not seen the survey. But he was sitting here talking about how, you know, the survey had come out and how everybody was happy, 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 and it was really great, and he was so excited. I had a copy of the survey. I was invited to go down to the National Press Office downtown and receive the survey, and they had the company on the phone so that people could ask questions, and I did ask questions. I had information. I had the survey in my hands, and I did get some questions. And I was impressed with how open they were. That was the first and last time they were ever open about their surveys. The second survey, I got a call or an email from Frank Rathbun. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the late Frank Rathbun, who said, "Shu, we just got a survey. Would you like me to come on and talk about it?" I said, "Sure, send it to me." So I got a summary of the survey.
Right.
And I said, "Sorry, Frank, I need the survey. I don't do summaries. I have to have the survey. The survey's not ready. Use the summary. Who did the summary? I did the summary. So can I have the survey?" "Well, it's not ready." "What do you mean it's not ready?" So, I don't know why it took 6 months for the actual survey to be, quote-unquote, ready.
Right.
When we had a summary that was done by CAI.
Right.
So I've always been very, very suspicious of them. He did send me the survey eventually. He did come into the studio, and I had someone from Zogby on the phone. And the guy from Zogby who conducted the survey was, I felt, very defensive and combative in a way.
Right, yeah.
Because when I asked questions, he was very, very combative.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never really been, I've sort of ignored the surveys ever since. I just don't have a good feeling for them. I don't believe that they're on the up and up. I would have a lot more respect for CAI if they admitted that there were problems and if they worked to fix the problems instead of start pointing fingers at other people, dismiss the problems. You know, they're little old ladies who are out in the street because they missed a payment, or maybe they were fined, or maybe the manager screwed up and did the accounting poorly. That should not happen. But instead of saying, you know, we do not condone that sort of thing, and we will take care of it, and we will make sure that our people are trained properly, they start pointing the fingers. Oh, it's just an isolated incident. This is all anecdotal.
That's the new word now.
They've always used anecdotal, isolated incident. But it's a little harder for them to use isolated incident because we keep having one isolated incident after the other, and it's the same isolated incident from sea to shining sea, all across the land.
And what about all the embezzlement? coming from CAI member managers.
Yes. And we don't talk about that, do we? We talk about how we're just not doing a good job of funding the reserves.
Yes.
We're running out of money. It's your fault. You're not funding the reserves. You people are being very selfish.
It's a little bit of both. And the other aspect is that even if people are paying money to the association every month, whoever is leading that association, if they're using it on what I like to call window dressing, or, you know, their own, or to pad their own family member's company, or, you know, if you have a management company, to use the preferred vendor at, you know, who knows, 10% higher cost, you know, for the contract. I mean, all of these things are, you don't know that your money is being spent in the most prudent way possible. Plus you have, you know, people who have their hand in the cookie jar, and not enough people on the board are watching. And so you end up with management companies or board presidents or board treasurers that are writing checks to themselves, using the ATM card, using the credit card, and money is just disappearing. And then when it comes time to, you know, repave the parking lot or put a new roof on or even keep up the landscaping, you know, there being people, homeowners are being told, well, there's no money. There's no money. What do you want me to do? Well, let me see the financial documents. We want to know how our money is being spent. Oh, well, then nobody wants to show you the documents. And then you play that cat and mouse game. Even though there's laws on the books in several states now that say, you know, owners are entitled to open financial records, right? But you know, only if you pay to see those records, and only if you specifically request what you want to see. And in some states, they want you to even say why you want to see it. There's just no rules. It's like the wild, wild west.
You know, check your governing documents, especially if you are in an older HOA like I am. Mm-hmm. The governing documents do not limit what you can see. As a member, as someone who has a financial responsibility to the HOA, you are permitted, you have a right to see every single piece of paper that goes through that HOA. It is only since they started adopting laws and allegedly regulating HOAs that CAI has written in and lobbied for limited access to the books and records. And that should not be. So by law, and in Virginia it's the same thing, by law I'm limited to what I can get. However, my governing documents give me permission to see every single piece of paper. So since I have greater rights under my governing documents, those rights prevail.
Right, unless you happen to live in one of the states that even the statute preempts what's written.
They can't.
In your governing documents. In some states, like in Florida, I have actually seen statutes written that say, notwithstanding what's in the governing documents, blah, blah, blah. You know, there are some laws that are written that way.
If you have a contractual agreement, which is what we're told this stuff is, the government cannot take it away. That's, you know, that's state action. They cannot take it away. They can increase, they can add to your rights. Mm-hmm. So if your governing documents, for instance, say that you're entitled to look at the monthly statement once a year, and that's in your governing documents, then if the state comes in and says, notwithstanding what's in your governing documents, you have a right to go in during business hours and inspect. So it's giving you greater rights, and that's correct, but it cannot take away from your rights.
Right.
It cannot say, oh, you have a right to see everything. Well, you know what? We're going to take away that right. No, it can't.
Mm-hmm.
The legislature cannot do that. So that's where the notwithstanding makes a big difference.
That's right.
So read your governing documents. If your governing documents give you greater rights,
then that's what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And know your, for God's sakes, know your governing documents. If you live in an older HOA, and if you've got to live in one, I would recommend an older one. You have more space, they're better built, and, you know, you've got greater rights.
Provided that the HOA or the has not had successor developers or declarants that have amended those documents.
I don't think they
which
can
I,
amend.
Which I have seen, and I've actually had some communication with several homeowners from different HOAs across the country, older HOAs, where a developer came in, say, in the 1980s, the 1990s, the early 2000s, and basically worked with, you know, they've been retaining control over these communities for decades in some cases. And what they did is they worked with their attorneys to completely amend the CC&Rs without going through the process of presenting it to owners, because the developer still has control over most of the votes. You know, they hold the voting interests that outweigh whatever homeowner votes there are.
If
so
you're
essentially,
still, yeah, if the developer is still there, then that's a different.
Right. Like, for example, Poinciana, for example, Diamond Head in Mississippi. You know, there's several of these types of homeowners associations. They're mostly larger, larger communities that exist in the state of Florida and the state of Texas. I mean, I don't know how Virginia law is, but they're all over. I know there's one in Pennsylvania. A developer or some affiliates of the developer have been involved in the leadership and have held most of the seats on the board for, you know, we're talking 20, 30 years. And it's impossible for, you know, that's what gets me when you hear the industry say, oh, well, you could just vote the bums out and it's a democratic process. That just makes me cringe, because it really depends on how the association is set up. And who's holding the voting interests? Because voting interests are assigned to property that you own, and if you have a developer or a declarant, they usually have weighted voting rights up until the point where the association is mostly built out. And in some of these large communities, that can take decades. So there is no way, there's no practical way possible that the rights of the homeowners who own, you know, one property or two property, that their votes could ever outvote an investor block or, you know, a developers or declarants or anybody who holds the majority voting power or the supermajority voting power in some cases.
Yeah, you know, fortunate. I mean, for instance, in Northern Virginia, where I live, you're not going to get anything that huge. The one enormous one that we have is Reston, and that's been around for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And they're still building in Reston. But I think that each cluster has their own governing documents. So I don't
That's usually how they work. The large-scale associations are usually set up that way.
And so there's no way that they can go in and amend, I don't think, the cluster.
They can, actually, because what happens is when you have a large-scale association that's divided into separate villages or separate districts, each one of those probably has their own governing documents, and they have their own board. And then whoever is the president of those village boards of directors usually is the person who is the board member for what they call the master association, which is like an umbrella association that governs all of the villages or the districts within. And the problem that you run into there is You know, you may be electing your village board, but your board members on your village board are electing the officers, so they're electing the president. And the president is the one who's serving then on the master board. So as a homeowner at large, you have no say over who is on the master HOA board, but the master HOA board governs the whole entire planned community. So there's assessments that you're paying to that master HOA.
Yep.
There's common areas that are governed by that master HOA. And you have to abide by any amendments that are made to the CC&Rs of that master HOA, even though you probably won't have a direct vote on it, depending on how the community is set up. Usually the only people who are voting on those matters are the members of the board. The village presidents, basically, are voting on those matters without taking the vote directly to all of the people who live in each one of the villages.
When I said older, I'm thinking of something that was maybe one of the original ones built in the late 60s, early 70s.
Right.
Where
before they got into these convoluted,
right,
complex, you know, hierarchical,
right,
political structures.
Right. And, yeah. You know, there were, the developer came back and built in some more housing several years later, but it was all attached to the existing CC&R. So there was nothing, I mean, if they had, I mean, I'm sure they had their own set of CC&Rs, but that did not affect anybody else's.
Right.
It did not affect anybody else's. So be careful. You know, in some places, you just cannot find something that's not in an HOA.
No.
And
that's one of the problems.
It is one of the huge problems. And even, you know, I keep talking about over 90% of everything in this area being in an HOA, but here's the problem. The less than 10% that's left is being torn up because it's not smart growth. It's using up too much land, and they're tearing them down and building all of these so-called luxury condos, mm-hmm. high-rises. They're worth a lot more than the little house was worth, and the local municipality gets so much more in tax dollars by doing that. So very much more.
But on the other hand, they're displacing a lot of people who then can't find any other place that's affordable to live.
Right. So
they're causing more problems and more expense in the end. You're causing some more social services expenses because you have people that can't afford to live.
But that's okay because they're getting a whole lot more income, tax income.
Well,
and they don't really care about that because, you see, the houses that are being torn down don't have an HOA. So when they go to the county cannot say, go see your HOA. They cannot wash their hands of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're shunting everything over onto the private sector. So what do you bet that we're going to have? Thanks to Judy, we're going to have yet another survey, CAI-sponsored survey, talking about how just so happy everyone is with their living situation.
Yeah.
What are the bets?
You know, but at least, even if you look at what the survey says, you still have 12%, even on a skewed survey, 12% are decidedly unhappy. And if you extrapolate that out, it comes out to, like, you know, 8 million people. There's how many? 67 million people who live in an HOA. So if you have, what do I have here? 12% dissatisfaction rate times 67 million people, that's at least 8 million residents are decidedly unhappy. And, you know, the neutral, I mean, you're talking, you know, between 19 and 22%, you know, let's round it off and say 20%. That's one out of five people are neutral. A neutral person is basically sitting on the fence. If they had an option to avoid the HOA, they probably would. But like you said, in some markets, you can't find an option that's not in an HOA. And I think that that's one of the biggest obstacles and one of the biggest problems that we have is we don't have a free market for people to purchase real estate or even to lease real estate at this point, because everything is funneled into these privatized communities. And until we can stop that public policy, there's not a whole lot of incentive for the industry to improve, because there's not that much competition. You're kind of forced to choose one. It's just trying to pick the less of two evils.
Don't give your local governments a pass. They are just as culpable in all of this. Debbie, thank you so much. Thank you so very much for joining us. Thank you for all the work you do. And it's Independent American Communities.com, right?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you.
And check it out. Sign up to get the notices, because you'll get several a day. Debbie, thank you.
Thanks, Chu. Love talking to you.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos.